This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is the eve of GE14, Malaysia's 14th general elections, so I thought I'd do something slightly different on today's show, and it has everything to do with interesting facts you may not know about the elections. Because when you really think about it, how much do we as Malaysians really know about our electoral system? Like, how much do we know about the kind of system we use and how our votes work? Or how many young Malaysian citizens have registered as voters? And why it matters that they do vote? Do we know what was the biggest election year with the most number of voters, and what can be learned from a turnout like that? In the studio to answer these questions is Masjaliza Hamza. She is the executive director of Watan. Now, Watan means homeland, and they are a non-partisan, non-profit campaign inspiring young Malaysians to exercise their basic political power to vote. They're not going to tell you who to vote for, they're just telling you what your vote means, and that's exactly what we're going to discuss on today's show. This is Five for Fortune with Arvind Yuvaraj and special guest Masjaliza Hamza of Watan. And today's episode is called Five Things You Don't Know About the Malaysian Elections.
Number one.
To understand how our elections work, first we need to understand the kind of system we use, which is called First Past the Post, or FPTP. We need to know why it is used, where it came from, and the pros and cons of employing a system like this. Every electoral system has its positives and negatives, and ours is no different, but it is important as citizens empowered to vote to understand the mechanism of the FPTP system itself.
First Past the Post, or FPTP for short, is a system that we inherited from our colonial masters. So the British brought it. It's a, you know, a parliamentarian type of voting, where one vote is for a candidate, usually from a political party, and it has a geographical location. So it's very simple in a system, simple for voters to understand, and also, it provides a clear link between the person you vote and who voted for them. So even if you have a seat where you've got 7 candidates in there, it's quite clear that people will be voting only for one candidate. So you have one X there, and when you count, the counting process, especially if it's a ballot paper and you have to look and decide, you know, which way the voting goes, is quite simple because you just look at the party that is next to the X. So you'll find that over time, in a first-past-the-post system, mm-hmm. you have, basically, in the end, you have two strong parties or coalitions developing, which is exactly what's happening in Malaysia. So the pros is that it's simple and easy to use. People can understand it very easily. They have to put an X next to a person who represents a party or a coalition. For the parties that are running, it's quite clear you're running. For example, this candidate is running in this area. You're able to vote also for an individual, a person, rather than a vague voting for a party, which is what people do in other types of voting. Easy for people to count. The counting process is quite fast. And then, you know, you can announce quite easily the next day. Whereas other systems is a bit more complex, you know, where you have to like figure out, okay, then this one gets however many seats, and then only you can figure out of that then who has the most number of representatives and who then can go on to form the government. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of you may not be able to come up with a clear winner in other types of voting, whereas for first past the post it's quite easily achieved in a way. If you win more than, for example, for Malaysia, there are for parliament, if there are 222 seats, if you win more than 111, you already can be declared a winner. It's simple majority. If you win more than 2/3, then you can do more things, you know, make more changes, example, to the constitution, etc. The cons is that it excludes small parties. Yeah, because in the end, you can see two clear major blocks, political blocks, emerging. For first-past-the-post system, it becomes such that these two will be really clear. So the room to have a third force, you know, which Malaysians have been talking about, etc., the room to have independent candidates, you know, it's a bit harder. It becomes a platform where only the big guys get to, you know, get to participate. And if you have a single party or coalition and it's easier for them to win, then it may come to a point where they are not responsive to the changes on the ground, right? Because even if you lose the popular vote, because of the first-past-the-post system, you still have the majority in parliament, you still make the decisions, you form the cabinet, you form the government, you make sure you have a huge impact in terms of how resources are allocated. So theoretically, in the first-past-the-post system, you can win a seat, even if you win by two votes.
Number two.
Politics can get confusing sometimes, and that confusion triples during election season. Social media doesn't help either, as much as it can be used to educate. A lot of false information is passed on via things like WhatsApp and Facebook. Now that you know what FPTP is, it is important to understand that it isn't a popularity contest. What this means is it is possible for a party to win with less votes as long as they have more seats.
If you think about it, in the last elections, Malaysian elections in 2013, opposition won more than 50% of the vote. But because that 50% translates to only 89 seats, therefore, they are unable to form a government. Mm-hmm. In a first-past-the-post system, it's quite linked to the boundaries. So if, say, opposition wins in constituencies that have huge number of voters. Just to give you an example, I think Kapar in Selangor is more than 140,000 voters. Mm-hmm. That equals one seat. So a seat like Putrajaya has less than 16,000. That also equals one seat. So if you win that, the seat in Putrajaya, one representative gets to go to parliament. And in elections, there is that a term that's very popular. It's called malapportionment. Malapportionment means there's a huge disparity between what that vote means. So one vote in Putrajaya means so much more compared to one vote in Kapar, for example, because of the number of voters in the area. At the parliament level, where you collect the number of seats and the party or coalition with the most number of seats then get to form the government, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much you win over. It doesn't matter. Your margin doesn't matter. How big your constituency doesn't matter, as long as you win the seats. I think in any elections, if you win the most number of seats, you will then get to form the government. How you come to that point, that's what makes it different. So for first-past-the-post system, it's quite simple in the sense that it's a bit clearer. Even in the UK, in the recent elections where there wasn't a simple majority, it's quite simple for the party with the biggest number of seats to then figure out, okay, how many seats do you need in order to make it a simple majority, and then you go to the party, you look at the other options, which ones, and then you court them, you do some horse trading in terms of like, okay, what am I going to give you, what can you give me, what do I have to give up in order to make sure that you will come onto our block in order to form the government, which is exactly what the Conservatives did in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Contrary to popular belief, Election Day isn't the end of a lengthy process. It is also actually the beginning of an all-new process. If you've exercised your right to vote, then you definitely want to know how your vote is playing out and how far your vote has actually gone. There is a way that you can keep up to date on the person that you voted for. You can check up on how they are doing, and you can also communicate with them via various channels over the next few years.
I think for everyone who wins, and sometimes even people who lose, they will open a service center. Yeah, so there'll be a service center, a parliamentary service center, for example, or a state assembly service center. So they will have people working full time, office hours. You can come in, you can write to them, you can email them. You can, you know, like if say there's a development in your area and it has a huge impact, negative impact on the quality of life of, for people in that area, for example, you know, you can put up petitions, make sure you go lobby, go to the parliament, say I would like, you know, call them and say I want you to, you know, we want to meet you because we feel that there's something happening in our constituency that we don't like and therefore we'd like to make it known. So there are various ways with which you can do that. We must make sure that they consult us. The consultation must be meaningful. So by meaningful, it's not just numbers, but also numbers of the right people that we should be consulting, that the government should be consulting before coming up with a new law, before amending, you know, a constitution, for example. You know, and that's what elections are, right? You want the results to represent what people want, the will of the people. And we need to work to make sure that people are excited about elections, feel that it means something, feel that even if it's just one vote that they have, you know, it means something. It works towards something and it's for the future. And it's because this has a huge impact in terms of various things, you know, allocations for education, healthcare. So for people to be excited about that and feel that it means something to them and it does mean something. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
We're going to take a quick break to get some messages in, but Ms. Jaliza is going to stick around to give us better insight into some interesting election facts, so I suggest that you do too. Five of Fortune will be back in a bit, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Five for Fortune. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj, and in the studio with me is Ms. Jaliza Hamza, Executive Director of Watan, a non-partisan, non-profit aimed at getting more young citizens to exercise their right to vote. Speaking of young people voting, Malaysia has about 2.5 million non-voters between the ages of 21 to 30 years old, which is a pretty disturbing number for a population as small as ours. This means that 49% of Malaysians in that age bracket have not registered to vote.
Number 3.
Watan, that's the organization that I work for, as well as Merdeka Center, did a poll last year. And in that poll, the sample size was almost 700. We polled only people in the 21 to 30 age category. And when we asked why they are still not registered, most of them would say it's because they are too busy. The other one is that they don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. The third choice that most people choose is that they don't think their vote matters. They feel that even if they vote, it doesn't have an impact on their daily lives. These are the key reasons that young people in that age category cite in terms of why they're not registered. In some countries, what they've done to make it a lot simpler is that when you hit 21, you will then be automatically registered. Yeah, so that then, you know, makes, you know, say, for example, there's groups like Watan. If there's automatic registration, then what we would work on then for, you know, throughout would be to create voter awareness, precisely what you mentioned earlier, make sure people know what their vote means, why it is important for them to do it, what does this mean for democracy, how does it impact their daily lives, make people aware of these links. Another way is to also make the registration process, if it's not automatic, to make it very simple. Currently, it can be fairly simple. You can actually go to a post office and register. And then, you know, there'll be a form that will be given to you, printed. And 3 or 4 months after that, you check to make sure you're on the roll. Elections Commission of Malaysia on its website says it takes on average 4 months. And that's because they update their roll only every quarter. So they will wait. So even groups that do registration, you will wait until the end, almost towards the end of a quarter. Then you collate all the people you register. If you do it, you know, in a form and then people fill up that form. Then you send it to EC in some Excel sheet format. Then they merge it together, etc. Then it goes through a process where they print all these names, put it at post offices, etc. for people to check and see if there are any objections. And then only it can be gazetted. And when it gets gazetted, that's when you can use that roll for the coming elections. So for example, if elections are held in a month's time, mm-hmm. the roll that will be used will be the one that's gazetted from 2017, quarter four 2017.
Okay.
That's how long it takes.
Do you have other stats, like what's the most registered voters in any age bracket?
That would be the over 60.
Over 60?
Yes. Hopefully by then, they would have registered. I mean, you would have gone through so many elections, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Number 4.
When it comes to politics and governments and elections, it's always helpful to look back at history and learn a thing or two in the process. Ever wondered what the biggest turnout for an election was or what year that was in? I mean, if we're worried about citizens not registering to vote, I think we can look back at history and try to understand why such a large number came out in a certain year to exercise their rights to vote.
The biggest turnout for elections in Malaysia was in 2013, where for parliamentary it's almost 85%. 84.84 to be precise, you know, compared to, say, 68% in 1999. People suddenly realize, wow, my vote counts. Maybe I should go out again in full force, you know. And especially for young people, you know, that probably brought people over to the polls. So they feel like their votes matter. So I think for this election, it's been quite an uphill battle trying to get people to come to that excitement level. So it's you know, it's quite a challenge. It's quite a challenge for NGOs like Watan mm-hmm. to just register people, you know. But I think for political parties, for them to work on making sure people actually go out and vote, 85% is actually really high, mm-hmm. especially in a place where there's no automatic registration and we are not compelled to go out and vote. I mean, just because our name appears on the electoral roll, it doesn't mean we have to. If we don't go out and vote, we don't get fined. Like in some countries like Australia, for example, you know. Even in Singapore, you know, voting is compulsory. It's not here. You're still given the freedom to choose whether to go out and vote. And even with that kind of freedom, 85% of people who have registered in 2013 came out and, you know, and made sure they made a choice. I think the trick is to offer hope to people, to tell them that their vote matters and for them to actually see it in practice, you know, for people to understand that this is a responsibility. A civic duty, some people would argue, and that, you know, this is the smallest thing that you can do to build democracy in your country. If we can make elections sexy again, if we can make democracy, you know, very attractive to the average person, especially to young people, mm-hmm. then this is what we're going to get, higher turnout. But in order to do that, we must make sure people register and then on the day itself, go out and vote.
Before we get into our final segment, let me just remind you that if you miss any parts of the show, you can stream it again using the BFM app, which is available for free on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. Now, let's talk a little bit about the process of voting itself. There's an interesting process that happens on the days before and after, mostly after, the election day itself.
Number five.
Just that after 12, you're not supposed to be campaigning anymore. You know, our cooling off period is from midnight, the day before elections. In Singapore, our neighbor, the cooling off is one whole day. So for one whole day, you can't be campaigning, etc. So it's to sort of bring the temperature down, right? We all are so excited, you know, like people don't sleep, you know, having to like climb and put up the flags and buntings and banners, etc. And all the charamas, the night charamas that go on, you know. So those things will just have to sort of die down and peter out. So like usually people will say 11:50, you just turn off the mics. Okay. Counting process happens on election day itself. By nighttime, usually they will start announcing who the winners are. Then you will see, you know, like a lot of flapping around happening in the corridors of power, etc., trying to figure out, okay, which party has the most number of representatives and therefore can form the next government. So once that happens, then, you know, the leader of the party or the coalition will go and approach the Agong and say, you know, the results of the election shows that I've got the command of the majority of the people and they want me to be the leader. They want my coalition to be the leader and therefore I would like to get your permission to form the next government, which is exactly what will happen. Then the Agong will you know, come up with a gazette, etc. And then you decide, then the Prime Minister decides who the cabinet members are, how big the cabinet is going to be, who the ministers are. If you have enough people who are actually qualified to run that ministry. What happened in 2013 is that some senators had to be appointed in order to take up certain ministerial positions in the government because for various reasons they couldn't find good candidates to fill up those. So you have to appoint them as senators first before they can become a cabinet minister. And in Malaysia, we've been fortunate because that's always the case. It's not like in other countries. And actually, in mature democracies, that is where there's not enough seats won and therefore there's no government. You know, like Belgium, like for more than 365 days, did not have a government, you know. But hey, there's no riot, etc. and all that. Because people know, okay, you don't have a government. You can't make certain decisions because you don't have a government. But services still run, you know, the civil service functions, you know, go do banking, you know, etc. Buy a house, everything. All these things can happen. So in mature democracies, even if there isn't a clear majority in terms of number of seats after an election won by a political party or a political coalition, you know, life still goes on, really.
Anyway, that is all the time that we have for today's show. A big thank you to Masjaliza Hamza, Executive Director of Watan, for coming in to give us all this insight into the Malaysian elections. We hope you learn a thing or two as you get ready to cast your vote. If you're a young voter and you want to know more about our elections and the process and just to know more about Watan itself, visit watanku.org and read away. Also, stick around because Enterprise Biz Bytes is up in just a bit. This has been 5 for Fortune with Arvind Yuvaraj and Masjaliza Hamza. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.